I'm just going to get into it because it's the news, according to me. It's Friday morning, January 16th, 8:23 a.m. in the morning time, Eastern Standard Time. I am your host, Kevin. It is, I don't know what's going on with my throat this morning. Some weird stuff happening there. We have a few things to talk about today. It is, like I said, it's Friday. 2026, by the way. And, middle of January already. It's already January. January's half over, a little over half over. And, of course, the beginning of the year, first of the month, first of the year. Really, before you know it, it's going to be springtime, and then it's going to, spring is always happens this way. Spring kind of comes up on you kind of quickly, and you're not ready for summer, and it's over with. And then you're into the fall. You still haven't got anything done for the winter to get stuff, covered up and closed up for the wintertime. And then basically what I'm trying to say is the year's almost over. That's what I'm trying to say. We have in my cup. My cup is not over. My cup is full. It's not overflowing, but it's full. It's full. Not as full as it was just a second ago, but it's because I just took a sip. It's chai, my big train chai with Coke. It's actually Almond Joy Creamer has got in there. My backup cup is delicious this morning. It is, my wife picked up some sweet tea. She went past Chick-fil-A yesterday, and picked me up a sweet tea. So I put it up and I put it in the refrigerator for this morning. But I did something a little bit unusual. I put it in a glass that has, with my laser, I actually put my name on the glass. I have a CO2 laser. I also have a diode laser? What do they call it? I got one of those too. But it's got, what else does that say on there? Oh, it just says her name, kind of hard to read. Anyway, that's what I've got. I put that in the Primo container for my sipping pleasure. I have a lot going on. But this morning I want to talk about the economy. There's a little bit of economic stuff I want to talk about. But just a few things happening right now that I think there's some things I haven't really had a chance to really go through all my feeds this morning to see what's going on with this whole thing with Tim Walz and everything happening in Minnesota and around the country. My understanding is there's a threat. The president has basically threatened to enact the Insurrection Act. And that simply means that they would be able to bring the military into the full pledge. The Posse Comitatus wouldn't matter at that point. Insurrection Act, they bring in the military to squelch the issue. And I want to talk about this a little bit. It is actually the fitting time to do it. This is actually an insurrection. When you look at the problem that we've got in Minnesota is a problem of the politicians who are encouraging people to push back on ICE and to attack ICE officers and to expel ICE federal officers from their city, from their territory there, whatever it is, it's city, county, state. State police are not allowed to intervene. So now you have, I think it was yesterday or day before, I think it was night before last. I don't know what happened last night. I'm sure there's more things happened last night. Night before last, a group of rioters, peaceful protesters, of course, peaceful protesters, busted into an ICE official's vehicle. They have their guns in a lockbox. They broke the lockbox out of the car, out of the vehicle. I think it might have been an SUV. They busted that open, took their guns, took all their documentation, all the things that say who they are, where they live, all kinds of things about that, records of who they were, all the people they were, the criminals they were going to go after, the people they're going to try to get. took all that information. Question is, what are they going to do with that information? Now, keep in mind that these are people who are these groups. There are people from these groups that are walking around the streets with safety vests on as if they are some kind of city employees directing traffic, closing down streets. And of course, they're calling on people to come and attack ICE officers, surround their cars and do all kinds of crazy things and trying to impede what their job is. Now, if they were doing something that was illegal, I probably wouldn't have as much of a problem with this, with what they're doing. The real problem here is that the state and local police officials, of course, now they're way down on their police presence because they've defunded the police. I think the numbers have been like almost cut in half from what I understand. Like, I think they had 8,000 officers at one point. I think they have 4,000 now or something to that. Don't quote me on the numbers. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a financial counselor. And I'm certainly not an expert on statistical analysis of the Minnesota Police Department. I have no idea. But I know that they've cut the number of police officers, even if they had tried to help them out and bring some kind of sense of order. It is complete lawlessness there. And like I said, these are anarchists. They don't care about anything about the law. They don't care about real justice. And here's the thing. They're not trying to protect anybody at all. There was a guy driving through town. He has a business, and he happened to have an SUV. They stopped the SUV, and they wanted to search his vehicle because they believed he was an ICE agent. They would scream if a police officer did that to them. But they're doing it because, they're justified because ICE, because ICE is the big boogeyman. How dare they drive through our city? And if you even look like them, well, that gives them probable cause, I guess, to do something that only law officials, law, I can't, as a private citizen, I can't just stop somebody on the street. I have probable cause that you, now if I believe someone is kidnapped in their car, I definitely do have the, if a crime is being committed at the time, just driving through the street is not a crime. You can't just stop somebody and do that. It goes against everything that the supposedly libertarians and the left and the liberals would be about. They were all about this. So democracy now, we got to protect our rights. But you're taking people's rights away from them, all based on the suspicion of the way they look. There was a guy who did a thing. I think I want to play this because I'm just going to play it over my phone. I actually recorded it. This guy goes into an area where there's a protest going on. And he actually, he dresses, his hair is purple. You have to kind of paint the picture of this one because it's something to see. It's literally something to see. But of course, I can't see it because I have to describe it. This guy goes into, I think this was on, it was on a, this guy's a popular gamer, I think. He's a podcaster. He's kind of become more of a right conservative kind of Trump-supporting type guy. He was more or less considered a liberal before, but I think he's kind of swung from that. But here he is. He's this guy's got a nose ring in. He's got the pink bandana on around his neck. He's got his hair colored blue. And he walks in and he starts asking this lady questions. She's a school teacher. He's asking her questions, and they're having this little protest thing about the school. They're having this like demonstration out in front of the school. And so he tries to make it. He comes up to her and he's kind of trying to be on her side initially, and he's kind of making comments. Of course, she recognizes right away the questions he's asking, the way he starts talking, because his voice all of a sudden kind of drops, and he starts becoming very pointed in what he starts to talk sense. And of course, right away she realizes he's not one of them. He's not one of them. He's a different kind of guy. So here we have. This is pretty funny. I'm going to try to play this. Hopefully it plays okay without why does it always do this?
Here we go. Says everyone.
Of course, no, it's not that one. Let's go to this one. Here we go.
Okay. Switch up is fast and you fail the purity test.
I saw that you have a sign in the window. It says everyone's welcome here except ICE.
Yes.
If ICE were to come onto the premises, would you guys kick them off?
Absolutely. We believe in the safety of our students and our faculty.
Big mistake.
Okay. Isn't that how immigration works?
I'm sorry?
Isn't that how immigration works? Everyone's welcome except illegals. And if they come into the country, we kick them out.
Uh-oh. You're asking me.
Well, it's a simple question. You should be able to answer it. You're a teacher.
I don't know who you are.
It was at this moment that she realized.
She's immediately aggro.
To know who I am. I'm undocumented, ma'am.
You're on school property, and technically you're trespassing.
Ma'am, no one's trespassing on illegal land, so...
Okay, well, you haven't shown me an
ID. Okay, well...
So this is how it goes. This is where it goes. It's illegal land. It's because we built this school on stolen land. So you can't be trespassing because you're on stolen land. Well, you can't kick me off here. You're living on stolen land. You stole this land. You can't trespass me. He starts claiming all the stuff. You know, he starts going through the whole thing, creating the, you know, the irony. Well, how can you kick me off of here if I'm not... No one's illegal. You can't kick me off your property. They're going to trespass him. He's on property that they don't want him there. He's trespassing because he's there illegally, right? So they can kick him off, but they can't. We can't kick them out because there's no such thing as an illegal person. Nobody's illegal. Just the hypocrisy, the stupidity, really, is what it is. It's just down. It's not even ignorance. It's just stupidity at this point. Ignorance is just when you don't know something, and so you're operating with a lack of knowledge. I'm ignorant of brain surgery. I'm ignorant when it comes to brain surgery. I'm ignorant. I know how to cut a hole in a head, and I can probably manipulate the brain around. But I don't know what I'm doing. I'm ignorant. You don't want me showing up for your brain surgery. Let's just put it that way. Unless I'm just there to like mop the floor or something. But I don't think you want me doing the surgery itself. And this is even though I have Google to help me through it, I don't think you want me to do it. Now, when it comes to flying an airplane, I've had some interesting conversations with people about that kind of thing. That's good, sweet tea there. I had so this is the kind of thing. But these people, she's a school teacher. She's teaching your children, and you know that this kind of influence, this kind of reasoning, thought, critical thinking is seeping into your classroom for these kids. It's the kind of thing we're dealing with. Now, supposedly, Tim Walz is kind of backing up with this whole thing with the insurrection. The whole problem, they're saying that ICE has come in and created chaos. That is not the case whatsoever here. That's like saying, well, because of your rules, it's creating problems. Well, if you weren't parenting your child, if you didn't tell your child not to do something, or if you didn't discipline your child, this wouldn't be happening. They're rebelling because you're disciplining them. No. You didn't discipline them in time. That's why they're rebelling, probably, or something. It's just, they're their own person. They can't, you can't necessarily, they make their choices. They suffer their consequences. That's some people just haven't bent for that. I don't know, understand that, but it's just strange. Growing up, when I was a kid, it's story time, boys and girls. I had when I was a kid, I had two older siblings, much older. They're huge. They're really old. They're super old, very old. They're about 7 or 8 years, 8 or 9 years older than I am. So they're really old right now. They're old and almost decrepit. They're so old. I don't think they listen to this show, but I'm going to let you know because they can't defend themselves. So they listen. I'd like for them to hear that part of it. Now, my sister's the oldest, and my brother was a year after them, and I was like 8 years after that. I kind of came along. I don't think I was necessarily, I don't think they thought, hey, let's have another one. I think I just kind of, hey, we're having another one. I think that's kind of the way that worked. I was not an accident, however. As far as God's concerned, I am not an accident. And for those of you who think that you were, you're not. Just want to be very clear about that. God didn't say, oh, I wasn't expecting that one. He never said that. I do want to say that my older siblings, I would see them get in trouble. And, you know, I was just kind of more of an observation. I'm sitting there as a little 3-year-old or whatever I was, and my dad would tell my brother or my sister not to do something, and they would do it, and they would get spanked, and they would be laying there on their bed crying. And I figured it out pretty quick. Well, it's, you know, that was simple. You just did, if you would have done that or didn't do that, you wouldn't be doing that. So I kind of put 2 and 2 together pretty quickly. And you either do it and don't get caught, or you just don't do it and don't worry about getting caught. One of the two. But if you don't do it and then get caught. That was the thing. You just don't blatantly disobey right in front of them. And I was sneaky. There were a lot of things I didn't do that I should have probably been spanked for, but I was pretty sneaky about it because I knew what would happen if I got caught. They didn't know. They were out there blazing the trail. Well, I know he said not to do this, but I'm going to go ahead and do it. So then they found out, you know, oops, I guess they shouldn't have done that because now I'm crying. That's kind of the way that works. And I think so I kind of learned early on that this is how things go. This is how life is. My dad he made a comment later on in life. I was probably in my 20s. He said, yeah, you kind of raised yourself. We didn't really have to raise you at all. We they had to take care of me. It was the normal stuff, but they didn't have to really give me a whole lot of guidance, which is probably why I'm so messed up today. But I learned pretty quickly, you know, that so there was a sense of self-discipline there, I guess, early on that I apparently had, that it was because of what I saw. I observed something and kind of learned in absentia vicariously through my siblings. So anyway, this is the kind of way this stuff kind of goes. My understanding is that these people are messing around and finding out. There's some things happening now, I guess, that it's out of control. There's a lot of private property being destroyed. Stores are being destroyed. They're burning their city down because of just stupid reasons. And again, this is the chaos they want to what they want is more killings. They'd have to have more of that. They've had some situations where this one officer was being beat up by the people came out with shovels and broom handles, something to the effect of they started beating up this one officer. I guess he had to fire some shots in order to get away. His life was in danger. And so this is happening again. Of course, and it's almost as if they want this. They want them to retaliate. But these what I call useful idiots, what the playbook calls useful idiots, is again the powers that be behind all of this. That you're not going to see them out there on the street putting their lives on the line. But they want you to be out there. They want to drum you up with all kinds of righteous indignation. This phony sense of righteousness, this phony sense of some kind of morality, that they're on the moral high ground and they're going to. They're emblazoned with this passion for the truth and the brain, for righteousness and for being the good guy, being the vigilante. And they are talking about taking up arms now. They're trying to talk tough now. All of a sudden, the Second Amendment matters to them. They want to take up arms. They want to start killing these ICE agents. That's what they're talking about. That I think most of it's just threats, but There are those on the edge. There are always those on the edge, on the fringe, who have a social disorder, who are easily pushed into this situation. I think it's going to happen. And again, this is a spiritual battle, by the way. There's definitely something going on with, they're not in their right mind. And if you look at all the things that are the fruit of the Spirit, these people do not have that. It is off the charts. There's no self-control. There's no self. It is just a blatant, I don't know, you call it possession, whatever you call it. Definitely being influenced by some serious stuff going on inside their heads. But the main topic I want to talk about today, we'll see how this goes in through the weekend. And by the way, Shabbat Shalom. It's going into this Friday evening. We have a lot of things happening with the economy, economically. I have this little clip I have from Elon Musk. And I want to play this because I think it's... that's not that. Where did it go? What happened to it? I know I recorded this. And it is gone. Isn't that something? What in the world happened to that? Well, I will have to try to find this. I've had it in my history. Maybe it's better that I play it here on here anyway. I'm going to see if I can pull it up here. It's Elon Musk makes this comment on the economy. Economists. He's talking about economists. I think maybe I'll just read this, or I'm not going to play the actual clip. I think I'm just going to tell you the story. So Elon Musk is telling the story. I'll just tell the story. These two economists are walking down through the woods. They're walking down this path. They're going down this nice little trail. It's a trail that everybody goes down. And they're going down it. They're walking together, talking together. Everything's going fine. Walking along, and they come across this little, it's a pile of poo on the ground. And the one economist looks at the other one and he says, "Hey, I'll give you $100 if you eat that pile of poo." He says, "Oh, okay." So he eats the pile of poo. Because $100 is, let's say $1,000, because nobody's going to eat a pile of poo for $100. Somebody might eat a pile of poo for a small pile for $1,000. I wouldn't do it, but there are some people who would. And economists, being the some of the people that they are, they eat this little pile of poo. It's rabbit poo, it's vegetarian poo. It's not. It's healthy poo. So it's a little poo of. Little pile of rabbit poo. And he eats the little pile of rabbit poo. I'm kind of embellishing on the story here a little bit. So they go down. So he's like, okay, so he pays me $100. Well, I guess, he did it. Pay me $100. They go down the path, keep on going. Everything's fine. And this guy keeps on talking. They come across another pile of poo. Well, now the original guy who ate the pile of poo, he says, "Hey, I'll pay you $100 to eat that pile of poo." Guy says, "Oh, but, okay, yeah, you did it. I can do it too." So he eats the pile of poo. He pays him $100, and they're walking down the path. And they both look at each other and go, both of us have spent $100. Both of us have made $100, and we've added $200 to the economy. But we both ate the same, both ate piles of poo to get it done, and but we're both in the same place right now. We're on the same place on the path. We both have a belly full of poo, and we have the same amount of money we were. But we help the economy. That's that's the kind of thing you learn. He said that's the kind of thing you learn in economics class. But you've added $200 to the economy because you both paid for. that's the balance of the way they teach economics in many many schools, many colleges, especially. The perfunctory universities that don't like capitalism, the ones who are pushing for socialism. This is the kind of economics you will learn about. Because they just don't. They just, that's just the way they do it. Because as long as the money's flowing around. Now, keep in mind, the reason they like it when money's flowing around is because it gets taxed every time it gets moved around. It doesn't matter, you know, if I trade, if the barter system is so much more efficient. So efficient. And it is absolutely based on normal economy. That is the purest form of economic trade is bartering. Because you have equal skill, equal product for equal product. And it's something, it's supply and demand at its base level. I want my yard to be mowed. Little high school kid needs money for school books or whatever he needs, whatever his little project is. Wants to buy a go-kart. I can make a go-kart in my shop here. So I can trade him a go-kart for, if you mow my yard all summer long, I'll give you, you can get a go-kart. I'll make you a go-kart. Or every time you mow the yard, I'll give you a part of a go-kart and you can put it together yourself. That's the most pure form of economic trade right there. And it's capitalism. It's a capitalistic, open market, free market trade. So it's maybe a better way to put it. The government has nothing to do with it. They can't get involved in it because there's no tax on any of that. They don't like that. So they like it better when the way they teach economics. Socialism has to have it that way. You have to have it that way. You have to have the trade basically through a governmental system, and everything has to be recorded through the governmental system so that it can be monitored and people can be, you have to apply to the government to get your what you want from them. Because they will provide you with something, but then there's strings attached to everything they provide. That's the way it always works. So there you go. That's your economics lesson for the day. We have a So this is the way, what we're looking at now with the economy and what's happening, we have a caboose effect happening right now. And I don't get me wrong, I think 2026 is going to be a bumpy ride. I think we're going to see some ups and downs in the market. I think we're going to see some ups and downs in unemployment and jobs creation, or everything that there is, simply because there is the pool of people who are willing to work is kind of shallow. There might be a lot of people out there who are willing to work, but there aren't. It's the pool is not very deep. It's pretty wide. There's a wide variety of people who can do a variety of different things, the trades, everything else that's out there. The, you know, plumbing, heating, all kinds of, you know, electrical construction, whatever it is. There's that kind of market, you know, auto mechanics. You know, service personnel. You can't. You know, AI can't do anything with that. It makes a very small dent on the. You know, you might have a problem with your car, and rather than taking it to a service technician, you might try to Google it, or you might try to AI. You know, what are the steps to fix this thing? What's happening with my car? How can I fix? I've done that. It has been effective in some ways. But then you still have to have the skills to do the actual physical labor. It's not just knowing. You just flip this switch and do that. That's about the extent some people are at. They can't go beyond that. Now, other people, you know, have a huge amount of technical skill. They can probably dig into it even without AI. They can figure it out. AI can give you answers, you know, directly where to look for, what color the wires are. I just had this experience with our motorhome. We had an issue with the leveling system. The hydraulic leveling system wasn't working properly. It worked fine at the first campground. I got it all done, went to leave the next campground. And it was, it wasn't working. The second campground, I couldn't get to work. And of course I was sick when I got to the second campground. I couldn't, you know, didn't feel like going outside. It was cold outside, rainy. I didn't feel like going outside and doing any work outside, especially. I just felt like sleeping. That's all I felt like doing. And so I ended up kind of doing some research, doing some stuff with ChatGPT. And I was like, well, so this is the problem I've got. This is the kind of system it is. You know, where do I begin to look for this problem? And this is what it's doing. Where do I even begin to look at this thing? And it right away, it didn't give me a wire diagram necessarily. It could have looked for that, but it didn't. It just gave me a description of the wiring that was going for, you know, look for this box, that this should be close to this. Test these wires, first of all, before we go too far with this thing, before we start tracking down fuses. You know, so I went to Harbor Freight, got a little, I didn't have my voltmeter with me for some reason. I usually have one in my toolbox, but I didn't have all the tools with me I normally have because we switched motorhomes over and I didn't have everything in there. So anyway, I did some testing with some wiring. Everything seemed to be fine. The connection seemed to be fine. No power to them. So then that's when we went into the fuse panel itself, looked into some things, and there were some fuses that I would never have thought were a part of. I looked at them initially. I looked at all the fuses and I thought everything was fine. The one fuse that I thought was... there was a couple of fuses that I would not have thought, because the way they were labeled, I wouldn't think they would have anything to do with the leveling system, but they did. And sure enough, it was just a 5-amp fuse. Fixed that, everything worked fine. Now, unfortunately, we spent 4 or 5 days at this campground with no leveling system. The biggest thing is stability. The coach kind of shakes around and does some weird things, and it's sitting kind of a little bit on an angle. You can kind of tell, when things roll off the table. But and once we got that done, it was much better. And, a couple other little things. There's just still a couple of small things that need to be, basically one major thing that needs to be kind of improved to make the experience much better. But we had then there was that, and there was some other things. The water heater had some issues with flow, and I found out right away through ChatGPT of what was going on with that. So there are many things I didn't have to call a technician for, that's what it amounts to. I thought I was going to take it to a dealer or something, have something done with it. I was able to do it myself, relatively, almost zero expense. And so just things like that that have been helpful. So that with respect to those kinds of things, yes, you will change the economy slightly with some things, but now but mechanics right now are so busy. If you got a good mechanic, they're probably scheduled 6 weeks out. That's where the economy is right now with the trades. If you want to get a house built, or we'd like to put up a building here at the house, I would like to put one up. It's like a bigger garage that we can park things in and get things under cover and kind of get some stuff straightened up around here and kind of make that place look decent again. And it's very difficult to find a contractor who doesn't, first of all, charge through the nose. And I know my wife recently she's going through kind of an AI course type thing, kind of learning some things about AI. And one of the little projects, of course, they have you do little work, like kind of activation type stuff. And I think one of the things they did was a renovation of a kitchen. I think it was a kitchen renovation. So you get the the contractor, you get different estimates, you get different things you want to do, and you kind of work through the project. And it was a good exercise. There's a lot more details, I think, that would be in doing it in real life, and especially when it comes down to the actual people or the actual contractors you're going to have do the work. But you can basically, it will give you in fact, I was working on a little AI project the other day, just started it yesterday, building an app and getting some things done. It gave me ways to build this app for free, basically, in a way that it will work. It has to do with a worship experience I've been working on for years. I've been trying to put this together for years. I explained what I wanted to do I was using Gemini, and it right away came back with step-by-step instructions on how to do this thing with a very small budget. Basically for nothing. One of the options was being able to do it for free. It was a little more complicated. And it's brilliant. I mean, this whole thing could possibly work. And now I see how it could all be put together. I was trying to, build an app and have a company build an app for me. It was going to cost me basically $2,500 to have the app built, plus all the other, just hosting the app and doing all that kind of stuff and making it work. It's going to be ridiculously expensive. Now, the way this works, it would enhance a worship experience for a congregation, and possibly many, many, many congregations would be interested in it. And I could actually do it for minimal cost for the experience. Plus, Plus, it would just be fun to go around and lead worship with this kind of a thing in different areas. I think there'd be it'd be a fun night of worship to just go around. I think people would enjoy, and it might be kind of fun. I could put together a band, I wouldn't necessarily have to be in the band, but it'd be fun to have just kids that want to be part of this thing and take off with it. I think it would take off on college campuses like crazy. So I think that the idea here is that you can do so much more with AI, and just within it's been 24 hours since I started this little project, and I've already got I'm overwhelmed with the stuff I can do. Now the amazing thing to me here is that I can take AI like that. So it gave me all these steps I can do. There are tools, there are other apps that I can use with AI to implement all those things. So I don't even have to lift a finger to make those things happen. It was telling me, get this thing with Google Sheets and put this in there and do this and start a spreadsheet and do this and do that. Paste this code into this thing. I can take all the stuff that it was telling me to do and I can give it to another app. And that app will implement everything for me. All I have to do is give it, permissions to certain things and do certain things with accounts, online accounts or whatever for certain things. It will work. It's the process of doing all that that takes a little time. You have to kind of work with it a little bit and understanding how all that stuff goes together. But now, don't get me wrong. This is all well and good if it's done with a good purpose in mind. AI has the potential to be a very dangerous thing as well. A table saw can be a very dangerous thing if you don't have respect for it and you don't use it properly. A power drill can be, a chainsaw. Name your tool. Can be a very, very dangerous thing. And again, where it's going and all the things that it is going to be pervasive into our personal lives. I think there's just going to be some kind of careful. I'm not going to give this thing all kinds of information about myself or anything. But it's just those kinds of things you have to be careful with. Doing projects, getting work done, I think is going to be an important part of what synthetic or artificial intelligence can do. But I think it's important that we learn to master it, not let it master us, and not let it be our master. In other words, it's not going to be my God. And I think that if we can kind of keep that perspective within our culture, unfortunately, we have a godless culture right now, for the most part. And I think they're going to look to AI as their God. The people who are on the top of this thing to start off with, I think, are going to be kind of the winners in this whole process. It's kind of like the people who got into the .com industry. And there's going to be a bubble. There's going to be a bubble. Everything's AI. You got an AI refrigerator. Got whatever it is. Everything's AI. And some of it's just computing processing. It's just normal processing things. And they're calling it AI. It's just anticipatory kind of stuff. That's not really AI. So a computer can be, any computer can be considered an artificial intelligence device because it is computing things on its own without you just push a button and it computes things for you. That's kind of considered its own. It's got its little own independence thing there that it can do. So it's just, it depends on how you define it. You get mixed up in words. My point is, all this stuff is I want to talk about how this affects our economy. Now the economic situation, I think because we're transitioning from this standard kind of normal administrative, I listened to this guy the other night. I don't know, I think it was last night while I was going to sleep. He had about an hour and a half long podcast, and he's been there. He's been through. He's probably in his late 30s, early 40s. He's been through the whole process. He's worked with big companies on putting together different marketing campaigns, presentations. He's been through all the big meetings. He's been in marketing. I think he was in marketing management of some kind. And he's been through all the stuff where people have meetings about meetings and have to pull a team of people together and everybody has to have consent and they have to be, give the green light to certain things in all the departments and everything. He's been through it all, and he understands how all this works. And then he said how AI can do this. He said, you can get a whole project done before you even attend the meeting. An hour before a meeting, you can have everything done and a project done and even a prototype made and tested in a virtual world, and then bring that to the meeting and say, how do you guys feel about this? And let's move on with it. Now there's things you can step on people's toes with, that kind of thing. But at the same time, he gets it, because it used to take weeks just to get approval to move forward with something where a team could work on something. Now your team can be literally agents inside your AI structure. And the productivity level we're talking about here is 100 times faster. And of course, if you're working in the AI industry, you're going to be able to increase AI productivity faster. And just new developments are coming out. They're saying, well, in the next 12 months, it's going to be really important to see where AI goes. Well, no, it's in the next 4 months. Because as things increase and people start to realize what they can do with this thing and how much they can use it to use itself. That's the real key here, is how do you create a structure with AI that you can make it do things for you. You can 10x yourself, or you can 100x yourself in terms of tasks that need to be done. And it's fascinating to me. At the same time, it's a little bit scary, but at the same time, it just amplifies anything that if you're a creative person, especially, it just amplifies anything you can do, which is just scary in some ways. But at the same time, there is going to be a different, this is going to change the economy, the way things work. It's just going to happen. It just has to happen that way. Mechanized farming changed the economy. Computers changed the economy. .com websites changed the economy. The internet. There's so much more getting done by people today. And by the way, this is one of those things where, unfortunately, it kind of levels the playing field. It doesn't matter who you are necessarily in terms of race, color, creed, whatever it is. You have the ability to be productive. Now, I want to talk about this whole thing with the economic. I'm going to get back to this thing with economics, because I want to take full circle here on this thing. True economics, the socialist would tell you, the communist would tell you, that there's only one pie, and everybody gets a slice of the pie. And what we need to do is divide up a slice of the pie equally, so that everybody, to each according to his ability, from each according to his ability, to each according to their need, kind of thing. Sounds beautiful. Everybody just working as hard as they can, and everybody getting the same thing at the end of the day, and we're all sharing together in this communal society. Doesn't work that way. People are not motivated for that. Just general society, people are selfish. That's just the way it works. We have this kind of self-sustaining type thing that's in us, and we want to make sure that so you work hard because you work extra hard to get something accomplished when there's an outcome that you're rewarded for. Now, having said that, we have a situation where they would say that there's one pie, and everybody needs a slice. If somebody takes too big of a slice, then that leaves less for the rest of us. Well, yes and no. The problem is, when you become productive, you increase the size of the pie. Now that little sliver that you got, it's with a larger pie. Now outside rim of the pie, because of the diameter of the pie, when the pie increases in size, that outside diameter that's a lot of space out there. That's a lot of real estate that starts to form as the pie gets bigger. And the more productive you are, the bigger that pie gets. The general economy, you've heard the saying, rising tide floats all boats. When you are productive, you add to the economy. That's where the economy increases. That's where the pie grows larger. It doesn't just because you're getting a higher wage. If a company is charging X amount of dollars for its products and is selling a certain amount of products per year, and it's just kind of where they're locked in, that's kind of where the general market is, They have a certain share of the market. Paying you more does not help the economy. It helps your economy. It helps your pocketbook. But it doesn't help the economy. The general economy doesn't increase. Finding ways to be more productive, to produce more for less, to help the population buy more of those products. Now you're increasing productivity. Now you're increasing the economy. That's the general rule in terms of I see economy as productivity. GDP has a bigger issue than what the stock market is doing. The gross national product is more a telling of where the economy is than anything else, even more than the market. The market is speculative. The market is, there's two things that drive the market: fear and greed. And I'm not going to get into whether those are good or bad things. They're both kind of bad, but that's what drives the market. People are afraid that something's going to go under. They sell. People are afraid that the market's going to, they think that the market's going to get, it's going to explode. A particular stock is going to explode. They will buy it because they are greedy. There's kind of good greed and bad greed. There's the kind of greed that walks on everybody else to get what they want. It's more covetousness but it is greed. But it's the same kind of thing. It's the same motivation. It's because you want to expand. You want to buy something that you think you're going to be able to sell for more. You're going to flip a house. You're going to buy it for $100,000 and sell it for $200,000 because you put $50,000 in it. You're going to make $50,000. Well, that's one way of doing it. You could say that's greed. Well, no, it's a survival thing. It's a desire to be productive and earn more and to be able to provide more for your family or whatever you're doing, or putting away for retirement, whatever you're doing, giving it to charity, whatever you're doing with it. It's kind of a, you could call that greed, with a small g, I guess. I don't know. But then fear is also the other way around. You might see the market tanking and you're thinking, oh, I got to, and I made this mistake big time mistake back in probably 2000, what was it? Was it 2008? I think it might've been 2008. Pulled a lot of things, parked a lot of things in cash when the market had tanked. I thought it was going to go down, everything's going to crash, everything's going to go away. Well, and you get this kind of fear-mongering type thing among many investing management companies. They will do the same thing. They'll say, oh, look, right now the big term is reset. And I've heard this so many times. My wife and I were listening to a podcast this guy does, and he was talking about this reset thing. And it's real. The reset thing is real. It happens every occasionally, every so many years. You have this larger reset. Some are larger than others. Sometimes we skip over them. There's been some sessions. Usually, I think it's every 7 or 8 years. There's typically a reset, and it's just kind of a market correction, market kind of thing. Something happens, and it's usually one industry or another. The last time I think it was 2008 was the last big one. It was a kind of the housing bubble, they called it. Different things like that happen. And the recovery time is, on average, it's less than 18 months. It's typically about 13 to 14 months the recovery happens. Now, sometimes it's longer, sometimes it's less, but the average is 13 to 14 months. Some people poo-poo this idea of staying in the market, through that whole thing. Don't panic, just keep going. And yet all the people who are extremely successful, and the older folks who've been there and seen it all. What's the guy's name? Gunger? Who's Warren Buffett's partner, and Warren Buffett himself. Berkshire Hathaway did not get where they're at by being aggressive and being crazy. They just stayed in the market. They stayed on what was solid. Coca-Cola and whatever it was. They stayed in. Of course, now into their 80s and 90s, they were multi-billionaires because of that. And and of course, there's this whole thing of, well, do you want to make enough money that you can, you want to enjoy your money while you're healthy enough to do so, or do you want to just die with a whole bunch of money? I wouldn't mind dying with a whole bunch of money, frankly. I'm going to be real clear about this. Because my goal is that at the end of that time, when I plant that flag in the ground at the end of my days, my last day, before they plant me in the ground, I want to know, I don't necessarily want to know, but I want to be able to have set up and established a purpose for that money, something that it's going to go on beyond me and help other people and affect other people's lives. It's not just going to be passed on to people who are just going to spend it on Xboxes and whatever stupid things they. Grants, scholarships, whatever it is, that are going to be possible to change some people's lives. And my wife has kind of a passion for nursing. She wants to have some scholarships for nursing and that kind of thing. So we're going to do that. And that's our goal. Now it's an ambitious goal. We're not there yet, but we hope by the time we're in our 70s that this is at a place where we can, if we pass away anytime between, and it's going to grow from there. Anything that's going to, we're able to keep going. If we live into our 90s, then it'll be incredibly awesome. That's the plan. Now, it may not go as planned. There may be some other things that happen. It might all go away. Who knows? But the effort is there. But we can't do that. You can't do that in a communal society where there is they're just going to take everything and give you what you think they deserve, and then they take care of everybody else. Because somebody else picks and chooses that, and it becomes, look at Minnesota. The fraud that happens there. The people who make the decisions are not always considering the best interest of everybody involved. They can pick and choose their own little pet projects with everything you've done for them. So it's just kind of that's where I'm at with this whole economic thing. Now, maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I've still got a lot to learn. You know, the more you know, the more you know you don't know. It's one of those. Is it the Kruger effect or whatever it is, Kruger effect? The more you know, the more you know. The more you know, you don't know. It's just the more you know, the more you don't know, the more you know, you don't know. When you don't know much about something, you think you know it all. And the more you know about it, the more you realize you don't know anything about it. So I pretty much don't know anything about nothing, about anything. I'm just a guy with a microphone, bunch of opinions. This is all for entertainment purposes only, by the way. Do what you want to with my opinions, but that's on you. But let me know what you think about what I think. You can call 812-379-8778. Or you can go to google.com/voice and leave a message there. And let me know what you think about just this stuff. The economy. Where you think it's going to go. How you think it's going to go. There's a lot of doom and gloomers out there. There's also a lot of positive attitudes out there. I'm kind of in the middle of that. I think there's going to be some ups and downs in this next year. Hopefully it doesn't affect the... Now, one thing we're going to have here is if the Democrats are able to pull off taking the House and the Senate, you can kiss Donald Trump goodbye. It's going to be done. They're going to get rid of him. Now, that being said, I think what he's kind of planning to do here is get it set up so that no matter what happens to him, I think J.D. Vance actually will step into his shoes. J.D. Vance has had a masterclass as well as Marco Rubio. They both have been going through a masterclass of how to negotiate, how to do this stuff, how to play the cards, how to understand the art of the deal. They've seen it enacted here several times. Rubio, I think, is a very intelligent guy. I think he has learned a lot in this process of Secretary of State and how it works with Donald Trump, how he understands negotiation, economy, the economics of business. I think that this is probably the one thing that he didn't have before when he was running for president, that he probably has a ground floor front row seat to everything that needs to happen with economics, negotiation, tariffs, and how Trump has brilliantly pulled off. I think the biggest thing that this whole tariffs thing has done is brought lots of investment into this country, trillions of dollars. I was talking to a couple guys yesterday, and we were having breakfast, and the one guy's he's pretty far left leaning. He doesn't realize how far left leaning he is. He's one of those people who kind of thinks he's just normal guy. He thinks that Trump is literally insane. He literally thinks he's insane. And he's not spoken about it very much, but we try to avoid politics when we talk to him. Now there's two of us that we can talk pretty much all the time, and then there's one of us, the one guy, we just kind of avoid that conversation around it because it's not going to change anything. All you're going to do is get into an argument. You're not going to affect much like these demonstrations and these riots that they put on. They're not affecting anything. They're not changing anything. They're not helping anything. It's not helpful. They may be helping their own egos or helping their own sense of self-righteousness or whatever they're doing. But they're not effectively changing anything for the better. They're not. They need to be, protesting down at the state house is where they need to be. If they want to change the law, change the law. Don't just take it upon yourself to enact some kind of righteous law that you have in your own head. That's what they're doing. My question to them always is, how are you affecting change? How is this making things better? In the process. But one of the things that we were talking about in the process of this conversation was, rather than bringing up Trump, rather than bringing up anything and the tariffs or anything like that, I just said, there's been a lot of commitment to investment into this country over the next 3 or 4 years. We're talking, about $19 trillion, I think, has been committed to investment in infrastructure in this country from foreign investments. So that is going to have a huge impact on our economy. And my hope is that we have enough people to step up and do the jobs that need to be done. Now, I think one of the reasons that Trump is saying that the E-1, the visa work program needs to be improved, it's not that we don't have skilled people here and people here that are able to do the jobs. That's not it. The problem is we're going to run into is nobody's going to want, because of COVID, everybody thinks that they can just sit home and get a check. We have a large segment of the population who does not want to work. They want to work from home or they don't want to work at all. I think the government should just send them a check and they should just be able to live free, have a livable wage, a minimum livable wage. Everyone should get that. Then you can sit home and play Xbox all day, whatever it is. And that's where we're going to run into a problem, I think, in this society that we've created because of partially because of COVID, but also because of the public school system and some other things about work ethic and the fact that a lot of people don't have any work ethic at all. So I think that it's imperative that we get in the forefront of this stuff, get on top of this stuff, and hopefully have a culture that's willing to step up and do some work and do the hard work, the labor that needs to be done to get this infrastructure built, first of all, and then just have the kind of it's going to be a golden age if we can keep this going, as long as the Democrats don't screw this up. They literally could. They're looking flat in the face of a potentially successful nation economically where everyone can afford health care. They don't just get free health care. Everyone can actually afford it. Or things can get competitive again. There's a guy, actual social justice warrior, or actual justice warrior. I think he's an actual social justice warrior. He's got a YouTube channel. The one thing I think this guy should go on the road. He's there's one subject he is extremely good at, and he's very clear about doing. I agree with most of the stuff he talks about anyway, but this one subject he is literally on fire with, and I think he's incredibly good at he should be the one arguing for a lot of these places that are trying to get rent control and all kinds of weird, crazy things. In some of these cities, they're trying to get rent control in New York and rent caps on rent, that kind of thing. I don't know what my dog is chewing on over there, but I don't know what that is. Anyway, he talks about the economics of it and how other, like Austin, Texas had a housing issue. Housing prices were going up. I think I need to check and see what that dog is chewing on. housing prices are going up, and the inventory was down. There weren't enough houses, and of course they were having problems with all that, and they didn't have the investments they needed. All of a sudden, they turned it around, and the way they did that was by increasing inventory. And they simply increased inventory through various things. One of the main things they did was reduce some of the red tape involved in building. But they also made it possible for the rentees, the people who were landlords, to actually raise rates to a reasonable rate. So as soon as the inventory increased, of course, initially the rates went up when they released the caps on rental property. What they're doing is I think it's New York City had this new legislation. I think it was New York. It might have been someplace else. It might have been up in Seattle. Or it could have even been Minnesota. I don't know. They put these caps on, and there was a 3% cap. So you could only raise the rent 3% at the end of their lease term. Well, that doesn't even keep up with 3% does not even – like you get some years where inflation goes like through the roof. Like during the Biden administration, we had like the total inflation rate was like 15% or whatever ridiculous. It was like over 9%. Doesn't even keep up with that. And then, so to try to make any kind of improvements in the property, and to try to keep up with maintenance and all those other things, you can't do that. They end up shutting them down. There's a lot of apartments and properties that could be rented out. A lot of these cities where they're claiming that there's no affordable, and it's all on the basis of affordability. We got to keep it affordable. We have to put price caps on this stuff. And they did this with aviation for a long time ago as well. They're back in the, I think it was in the 80s when they raised the. They had price caps on tickets. Planes were flying around with hardly anybody in them because they had. What ends up happening when they put standards? I think the standards were so much per mile that they could charge. So if you had a flight that was 500 miles, a 500 mile flight, they could only charge so much for that. They put price caps on everything. So all the airlines just charged exactly what the price caps were. Well, people couldn't afford that necessarily. So the planes were flying around with empty seats, but they were making enough money to keep the planes flying because they were all charging the same rate. There was no competition. Delta charged the same thing as Northwest, and Northwest charged the same thing as United, and to do a certain flight to flight because it was the same amount of miles. Now they could offer perks. They could do all kinds of other things. They could try to do things to get market share. But then when that happened, when they reduced the caps, when they took the caps, initially prices went up. It shot up. Of course, then here came the low-cost carriers. And all of a sudden, the competition forced the legacy airlines to reduce their prices. Then they started trying to compete with the low-cost airlines, doing all kinds of crazy things. I don't know if any of you remember back in United for about 6 months or so, it wasn't even a year. They introduced this thing called TED, supposed to be their low-cost airline within the airline. TED. No frills. Charge you for every little thing. Just like they were trying to compete with JetBlue and Spirit and some of the other low-cost, like Southwest. Didn't work out too well for them. All of a sudden, they turned that around. Went away. They were just making all kinds of weird decisions at that time. But the competition over the years now has caused flights to be reduced. Now, it's averaged out now. People have kind of found their groove. The different industries, the legacy airlines have kind of found their groove, what they offer, the mile, you know, the airline miles, all the other things, the upgrades, the perks, all the stuff that they have. All that kind of stuff has kind of fallen into place. And you still have low-cost carriers. Now, low-cost carriers are struggling because people don't, you know, talk about flying on Spirit. People, you know, great company. However, you know, just you're going to get what you pay for, basically. It's, you know, there's some other companies like Allegiant and some others that do an awesome job. And they're the point to point. They have a niche. They go into certain places and they kind of stay within their lane. They know what they're doing and they're very low cost. But they only operate certain days. Now, if you're willing to put up with the limitations of what they do, you might get a ticket from South Bend to Florida for $80. But then coming back might cost you $120. Oh, you want a bag? Well, that's going to cost you another $20. Whatever it is. There's different things like that. But it's again, the competition, it was all opened up by the price caps coming off. Same thing happens with housing. Same thing happens with any industry. The government steps in and tries to level the playing field or whatever they're trying to do, trying to make it affordable. Affordability. Affordability is going to be the big term. That's the main word driving most of everything is going to come into the next. The 2026 elections are going to be all about affordability. You're going to hear that word affordability. That's all you're going to hear about. That's going to be the main buzzword. Of course, everything's going to spring off of that. That's what you're going to see because that's been their tried and true focus group tested thing. So we'll see what happens with all that as time goes on here. But that's kind of where they're at. I've talked way too long. Gone much longer than I figured I would. I want to thank you for listening, folks, by the way, for this week. Next week, again, like I said, I'm going to be in Little Rock. Early in the morning, I leave out of Little Rock on Monday morning. I'm hoping to be able to have a show. I get in kind of late into Little Rock on Sunday evening, and I'm hoping to be able to put together a quick show there that I will be posting on to come out to be like post-dated kind of thing. I do the show the night before, and then it gets introduced that morning. It's a different vibe, though. I don't have my chai. I don't have my sweet tea. I don't like drinking chai in the evenings. I kind of like that thing where I'm sitting down, having my cup of, whatever you got, coffee, whatever it is, and just spending that time with you, the listener. I realize it doesn't usually, like the show's going to be posted probably close to 10 o'clock in the morning. I think I'd rather do an early morning show. In order to do that, I have to do it at night. So it's going to be kind of a different vibe, though, at night than you have during the morning. So it's just kind of a weird, unless I start getting up at 4 a.m. and start doing my show at 4 a.m., which I might start doing that, actually. I might actually start looking into that. Because I know I'm much more productive early in the morning. I'm kind of a morning person. Don't necessarily like getting up early in the morning. The problem is sometimes my work schedule shifts in a month and I end up having to work late. And when you're working into the midnight hours and you're used to getting up at 4 a.m., your body clock is all messed up. So I'm not sure how that's going to work, but we're going to try it. I'm going to give it a try. So in the meantime, thanks for listening. Thanks for putting up with me this week. And I'd really love to hear what you think about what I think. You can call 812-379-8778, leave a text message or a phone call, and I might talk about it. Now, you never know. I might. Just dare me. I might do it. In the meantime, folks, have a great weekend. Have a great time with your family in this beginning of the new year. And I hope this is a prosperous one for you, a productive, prosperous year for you and your family. And I trust that we will continue on figuring out what's going on, navigating everything that's happening with all the craziness out there. Just keep your head down, keep your head on a swivel, all those things. In the meantime, God bless. Have a great rest of your day, a great weekend. Take care, and I will see ya.